You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO, and thanks to Emily for that music selection, which was Jack Kerouac. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and I am speaking with Bill Morgan, the author and editor of more than a dozen books about the Beat Writers, including the acclaimed biography I Celebrate Myself, The Somewhat Private Life of Allen Ginsberg. Bill Morgan's latest book is called The Typewriter is Holy, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation. Bill Morgan, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
What got you so interested in this group of people, the Beats?
Well, I was in college in the 1960s, and I was assigned a paper, and I decided to work on something about Lawrence Ferlinghetti. And the college liked the paper and wanted to publish it, and I needed to ask Ferlinghetti some questions. So I wrote to him in San Francisco, and a whole list of questions, and he wrote back, and he said he was way too busy to answer the questions, but if I wanted to come out, and I was in Pittsburgh at the time, to San Francisco and stay in his apartment for a couple of weeks and go through his files, I could ask questions in person. So I jumped at the opportunity, you know, and worked on that project for quite a while, and through Ferlinghetti met Allen Ginsberg, and then that continued to be a career for me.
Yes. What exactly, you were an assistant to Allen Ginsberg. Could you describe what you actually did?
Yeah, for the last 20 years of his life, I worked as his archivist and assistant in the office, just keeping his papers in order and then assembling books from those papers to publish. And then since his death, I've edited most of the books that have come out of his work, his letters, his essays, that type of thing.
Talk a little bit about your definition of the Beats or the Beat Writers or the Beat Generation, and if there's differences in those three things.
I guess there's a difference in everything associated with the Beats. People try to lump them all together, but they were really individual writers. And what they did have in common was a friendship with Allen Ginsberg. A lot of people try to find a definition in Jack Kerouac's writings because he first named the Beats in 1948, and he called it a Beat Generation. But at that time, he was talking about the people that came through World War II who were beaten down and worn out and wanted to start a new kind of society. But later on, he became convinced that he, by beat, he meant beatific and a blessed community of writers. Over the years, it's taken on different terms. And then, of course, in the 1950s, it became associated with the beatniks, which was a derogatory term that the writers didn't really want to have anything to do with.
And who coined that, or how did that actually arise?
That started in San Francisco. It was 1958. Sputnik had just been blasted off into space, Russia's first satellite around the Earth. And the columnist Herb Kane thought that it was a cute idea to combine the words, and he called the beatniks by that name because he said both Sputnik and the beatniks were far out, man.
Well, why do you say that this history of the Beat Generation really is about Allen Ginsberg and his development of a circle of friends?
Well, I think it's because each of the writers was completely unique, individual. They didn't have a manifesto the way some groups of artists, like the Cubists, for instance, or the Surrealists, were all trying to do the same thing with their works. But the Beats weren't unified in that way. Each one of them was a different person, had a different style completely. So the one thing they did have in common was Allen. I think Jack Kerouac might have been the most famous, but he was a shy person, retiring, very conservative, and he wasn't the nucleus of the group in the way that Ginsberg was.
And Ginsberg was very social in a way that he tried to attract people to his person and his apartment, etc.
Oh, yeah. He was a great marketing expert, and he realized that by getting his friends together as something like the Beat Generation, that they had a better chance of becoming published and becoming well-known and going on in their careers than just these individual writers sort of speaking out in the wilderness.
Now, the original connections that were made among many of these people with Ginsberg were made when they were very young, or at least Ginsberg was 17 when he started to connect with some of these people. Is that right?
That's right. He had just arrived at Columbia University, and he began meeting people at Columbia, but also people right on the fringes of Columbia. And Jack Kerouac was one of those. Kerouac had gone to Columbia as a football player, but when he broke his leg, he dropped out of school and just hung out around the campus writing. And then there was another, an older man by the name of William Burroughs, who hung out around campus. They became friends with him, and that was really the nucleus of this group. Then in the 50s, it went on to the West Coast, and that's where they met a lot of the people from your area, like Gary Snyder and Phil Whalen, who both are from Portland.
Mm-hmm. How does Gary Snyder feel about being included in the term beat?
He doesn't consider himself a beat writer at all, and that's one of the points that I try to make in this book. Since there is no manifesto of what it means to be beat, it really depends on how you define it. If it's a negative term, I can understand why Gary doesn't want to have anything to do with it. But he's usually identified with that group of writers who were circling around Allen Ginsberg in the 1950s.
And there was, in that very early time, it was interesting for me to read, I didn't know that there was a murder. And I knew about the shooting of Burroughs shooting his wife, but I didn't know about the murder that happened at the very early time when Allen Ginsberg was connecting with some of these people. Could you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, that happened in that first year when Allen was so young. But a close friend of theirs, in fact, the person who introduced Kerouac to Ginsberg and Burroughs, was named Lucian Carr. And he was also Allen's age, very young, a student at Columbia. He was being followed by his Boy Scout troop leader, who was about 15 years older than him and had followed him to private schools around the country and then followed him to Columbia. And one night, they were also heavy drinkers, and one night after drinking heavily, Lucian decided that he didn't want to have anything to do with this old man anymore, and he stabbed him and threw his body in the Hudson River. That, in turn, got William Burroughs and Jack Kerouac involved as material witnesses in the case, and they went on to write about that in a book that's just been published called And the Hippos Were Boiled in Their Tanks.
Which doesn't have much to do with the book itself, am I correct?
That's right. It has nothing to do with the book. Burroughs heard that on a radio announcement about a fire, I think, in a circus, and he just loved the title, so that was the title they slapped onto their book. Now, it wasn't published for, 60 years. It wasn't a great book, but it's a very interesting look at that early group of beat writers.
You're listening to Bill Morgan. His latest book is called The Typewriter is Holy, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and this is Between the Covers, a weekly program featuring interviews with authors. It's part of KBOO's weekday 11 a.m. programming we call Arts, Culture, and Community. And we turn to you now in our community and ask you to support this programming and KBOO Radio. And we do have Allen Ginsberg's talks and interviews in our archives, because I know that he was here a couple times when I was here in the late 80s or early 90s, and did some great interviews and various happenings at KBOO. I think one time he was here with Ray Manzarek of The Doors. I believe they were touring together. But right now I want to talk to Bill Morgan about more of this history, because he certainly has quite a list of books around this group of people. And for this particular book, Bill, how did you approach it? Did you compile what you'd already researched, or were you doing more research for this book?
Well, I've always worked with the beat writers as an archivist. Allen introduced me to all of his friends. So I've been lucky enough to work with nearly every beat writer, preserving their archives and selling them to universities. So that was a big help. I knew the people, and then I could ask them questions. So I did a series of interviews, but also did a lot of research and tried to condense this history into something that's readable. Right. Usually my books are 600 and 700 pages long, and they're very hard to get into. But this is to be more of a popularized history, so you can just pick it up and read it as you would any nonfiction book.
Right. And it does, there's a lot of action in the book. I mean, the sort of the events that are happening at one time that connect all these people together, there's just, these people did a lot of different things.
Oh yeah, and it's fun to group those all together too, and try to see what were they doing when this happened. And I mean, it gets into Oregon quite a bit too, because Alan went to see the Beatles in Portland when they performed there, and wrote quite a good poem about it.
What was that called?
It was called Portland Coliseum. And he had just been to Reed College at that time with Gary Snyder to read his works, and then he went into Portland to see the Beatles, and the Beatles acknowledged that he was in the audience, and so he was very proud at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, can you talk a little bit about this group and what they actually did as far as influence the culture? What was the true Beat Rebellion, I guess, is one question I have.
Right. They weren't all necessarily rebels either, and that's something people often think, that they were all rebelling against things. But Jack Kerouac is a good example of someone who really wasn't rebelling against things. He just wanted to do it his own way. But in general, I would say that they influenced the culture in a half a dozen ways, maybe most importantly through their fight against censorship. And in the 1950s, their books were taken out of bookstores by the police, and William Burroughs' Naked Lunch was put on trial in Boston. They started what became the free speech movement. And in a way, the free speech movement then of the 1950s influenced the civil rights movement, and then all of the sexual liberation, gay rights movements, the things that came after that we usually think of as the 60s, were a result of those early fights and struggles they had with censors.
Mm-hmm. And the whole experience when Ferlinghetti published Howl, right, that was a big part of it.
That's right. The police came into those tiny City Lights bookstore. Lawrence had just published Allen Ginsberg's very first little book of poetry. They arrested the bookstore clerk and Lawrence Ferlinghetti, and there was a famous trial that took place. And in a way, that act of censorship is what made the Beat Generation famous. Otherwise, I don't think anyone really would have heard about this little tiny book sold in a little private bookstore in North Beach. But it was due to that censorship battle that put it on the cover of Life magazine and made everyone in the country talking about it and debating whether works of this type should be censored or not.
Did you talk to Ferlinghetti about that experience?
Oh, yeah, I've talked to him quite a bit about that, and he thinks it's just remarkable that the very people who were out to get them were the very people who helped him establish quite a successful business and publishing company in San Francisco. Divine retribution, I guess.
Of this group, who do you think was the most influential from a literary point of view?
I think it would be Jack Kerouac. I certainly think that he is the writer who influenced more young people coming along in a direction of becoming writers themselves. There's something about his books that even today they sell more and more copies every year, because they speak to people in high school and early college about expressing their own feelings and emotions in an honest way. And I think that was very important. Each one of them made contributions to literature, but I would vote for Kerouac.
Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned a little bit about him, his personality, and there's definitely a lot about his life within the book. What do you think that should be noted about Kerouac that's not been focused on in the past?
Well, I think one fun thing to mention about Kerouac is you think of his books, especially On the Road, of being these travels across the country, thousands of miles back and forth, hither and yon. It's interesting to note that Jack Kerouac never had a driver's license, couldn't drive a car. He was always the passenger in the car. He was always hitchhiking or riding in the boxcars. But throughout his entire life, he never drove.
And the whole issue about the scroll that he wrote to start out with, is that really true?
Yes, it's true and it's false. It's true in the sense that he did sit down and in a period of 3 weeks typed On the Road, as we know it, in one long paragraph without punctuation on a scroll that he fed into the typewriter. The thing that's not true about that is he had been trying to write that book for 4 or 5 years beforehand. So he had gone through a lot of drafts and different versions of the story. He knew what he was going to write, but he did sit down and then in a nonstop burst of energy, type it up front to back.
Mm. You're listening to Bill Morgan. His latest book is called The Typewriter is Holy, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation. We're going to talk to him a little bit more, but right now we want to take a break and ask you to please support Between the Covers. That's the program you're listening to right now in KBOO, and your help would be very, very appreciated at this time. And we return now to Bill Morgan, who is the author of The Typewriter is Holy, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation. Bill, the Beats have had some prejudices against them, and people have written very critically about them. Can you talk about that and how that came to be?
Yeah, I don't know why it came to be, but I do know the history of it. And it seems that in the early, mid-1950s, the academic writers really looked down their noses at these upstarts. They thought that they were uneducated hooligans, actually, not realizing that most of them had college degrees and some had doctorates. But they called them the cult of unthink. They had different expressions for them. And then when they thought of beatniks, they really seized on that to show that they were nothing more than juvenile delinquents. But they really did pick on them a lot, I think, because they wrote in a way that was based on the way people speak, the language of the streets. It wasn't the refined ivory tower language that they were used to in poetry, and that upset a lot of people in academia.
Do you think there was any prejudice against their homosexuality?
Well, also, of course, there always has been the prejudice against any kind of minority, and that certainly was a big part of some of the gay writers' lives. And there were so many reasons, though. They actively used drugs, and that was something that people were against. There were a lot of things you would ask earlier about revolting against things, and they were rebels in many ways. Many of them fought against things that were the conformists' way of doing things. But I just try to not lump them all together because, for instance, Jack Kerouac supported the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. if you can imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
So each person was different, but in general, they were always on the side of the angels, I think. They were always looking for the truth, but sometimes that rubbed people the wrong way.
And then they also, the negative side of some of their work was that their own individual freedom came at the expense of others.
And that's really a bad legacy that's been left. I mean, I love a lot of the people in the Beat Generation, but there are some negative things about them that you have to consider. And that certainly is one of them. I always blame them for giving birth to the Me Generation. I think people always think that the hippies in the 60s came out of them, but I also think this focusing on yourself to the extent of maybe injuring other people is also an outgrowth of their ideas.
Mm-hmm. And your book shows some of their own personal acts that left others in tatters.
That's right. They certainly weren't liberated when it came to seeing women as equals. That's one big thing that I really recognize in the story. And there are very few women who are members of the Beat Generation. They thought of women like those people from the 30s and 40s who should stay home, raise a family, and support the men while they went out and did wonderful things. So there are parts of their philosophies that really aren't in tune with us today.
So you have devoted your life basically to this particular area of our history and this particular movement of literature. It must be a fulfilling thing for you. I guess my final question is just how you look at that now as you're writing this summary, so to speak.
Oh, it's always been interesting. I started out as a librarian, in fact, in Roseburg, Oregon.
Oh, really?
And from that, it expanded into this work with different writers, and I've always enjoyed that, and the research is always fun. So it's not over yet.
Okay. Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for being a guest on KBOO and talking about this book. Very interesting to read and see all these lives brought together in one book. Thank you
so
much.
It's been fun.
I've been speaking with Bill Morgan. He's the author of The Typewriter is Holy, The Complete Uncensored History of the Beat Generation. This is Between the Covers. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. Stay tuned for Words and Pictures with SW Concert.